Blog Talk Radio.
Fill my eyes with poetry. Happy Friday, as always. And hello, Rex, and how are you this evening?
Oh, I am doing fine. Thank you very much. What's that?
You sound like you're getting your Bela Lugosi together for next week. That was odd.
Listen to the children of the night. What sweet music they make.
Oh my goodness. That's good to have something to smile about there. I like it. It's hard to believe next week is Halloween week already.
All goes to the doors that week.
I'm telling you, we got all kinds of stuff happening. We got Hearst and we have we have everything. We have circuses and we have trains. I don't know. We just have a real great mishmash of everything for Halloween week. I like it. I like it a lot. And lots of good poetry to be had. I'm looking forward to it. Always look well forward to Halloween week because there's so many wonderful rites that people put out in the spirit of Halloween. You know, some are funny. Some are serious. Some are spooky, scary. You know, and that's all right, because Halloween's for children of all ages, I believe. You know, just
yes,
like the circus. I don't think that our circus is intended for kids of all ages, but it's a good one. So yeah, I don't know, but Halloween week is upon us. I have a ton of rights on the board tonight, a ton of rights. I tried putting standing room only and people didn't see it. Then I put full show, people didn't see it. Oh, it should be interesting, but it'll be a challenge to get through them, as always, you know. But it's always wonderful. There's always good poetry, so that's the upside of it all. Absolutely. So, I don't know, Rex. What do you think? What do we got happening? Everybody, just so you all know, that there's a new topic board out in LNP for people who have published their published books. Anyone who wants to be added to that list, feel free to send to me where I can get a copy of the front cover and the link to where it's sold, and I'll put it on there for you. Just that way I can keep some semblance of order to it. Nothing personal. And let's see, what else? I don't know. There's so much. There's so much I can't even keep track of anymore. And since all I've done was sleep, I feel like I'm ripping a wrinkle. All I did was sleep the whole last week, so I guess once I wake up, I can get my act together again. So, you know, sometimes it beats that way. Yeah. So winter is coming my way, so and I tell everybody, I was a bear in my last life. Because when winter comes, I like to hibernate. So maybe there's some truth to that that nobody's aware of. Anyhow, Rex, I guess since we have like 27 or 28 poems on the board, we best get our acts together. What do you think?
Yeah.
This board is busy. So I'm going to start off. I have 1, 2, 3, 4. I have 5 poems carried over from Banjo Lynn's tribute show, and we are doing those first tonight, you know, one way or the other. And I'm going to put up a piece by Barentoff for you to start us off with. And here we go.
All right.
Whenever you're ready.
A note by Barentoff. The last of those seasonally warm days pull and weave their way into the northern denizen. We know the winds will change and moments fleeted will fall away, leaving nothing but empty trees and shriveled relics of summer's passing. So we take that long bike ride through the valley, climb that hill too often left too late before. Snow covers the trail with its icy chill. In doing these things, we hope to capture and hold summer's last warm, succulent breath. Just like the spider, we trace out in those final days. Too late, we seek that jeweled orb beauty, only to discover a sack of spun silk and perhaps the spent, shriveled remains of that once full and giant spider who wove that tight, symmetrical web of wire, strong thread, and captured the final summer cricket, sucking out life's juices. In the spring, after cold has taken all and fallen away for yet another year, those who came before will be only brief memories to the budding leaf and the tiny spiderlings who fight free from the web of the nearby skeletal shell and float away to find a life in a world of unimaginable beauty. End poem. All right, then. What do you think? You're not there, are you? Or are you mutated to start the day?
Yes, I had to cough and I put myself on mute and totally forgot about it. This is this is a wonderful wonderful piece by Barentoff. And I have to go back and read that. Barentoff. I did say it right. It was wonderful. And I have to say, I read the author's notes. This was written on a woken dream as I discovered a nature writing in an old cookbook in my mother's hand. The writing was fictional, but I thought it fitting to capture the spirit in the rite. We all leave this world. A lucky few leave something behind worth keeping. When I saw your contest, I knew it was written for just this purpose. Banjo Lynn. What a wonderful tribute that is to Van Zuylen. Excellent imagery throughout this poem, and just so beautifully put together. And I think that it was just a wonderful, wonderful piece. So, yeah. I can't say enough. I mean, as they say, the imagery in it is wonderful. The story of that spider is just incredible. And you don't really think about things like that, until someone puts it in front of you and says, yeah, excellent job. So great job, Byron Tuff, and thank you so much.
Oh, absolutely. I like that opening stanza. It hints at the notation of death itself. And that thought in the second stanza, take that long bike right through the valley, is kind of that notion of walking into that light and looking through to the end of the tunnel. But that thought with the thought of the spider itself and the spun silk, the sackets, and offering up that notation of metamorphosis, so to speak, but leaving a note to the with the baby spiders coming up as those little fledgling thoughts that are left afterwards, those things people latch on to, catch, and then you get that again, that thriving note of sucking out life's juices, living life to its fullest. And on the back end, where it does hit on that angle of the tiny spiderlings who fight to get free from the web, that rebirthing, so to speak, where it's something that can be looked down upon, looked down upon, so to speak, but looked on down the road as something that everybody still can remember in those moments when that summer was full and blooming. So nicely done there, Baron.
Absolutely. I great piece. Let me see now. The next piece I have is by Argo Wings. I'm going to put this one up. I'm going to read this one. And, this is called, Well, I Let This Sit a Week, and It Still Sucked, But You Deserve Something, by Argo Wings. I heard this morning as you're gone. I've been away too long, so I'm left to read through old messages, chuckling through the tears at your self-deprecating humor. My body gets confused, faulty wiring failing to compute grief, tears giving way to a chilled numbness that doesn't quite register. So I'll get lost reading you again for the 2,357th time, my memories fixating on the breaths in between lines, and watch you give us yet another heart transplant. 4 years we've been exchanging reads. I didn't even know you. Not really. Funny how I felt like I did. But that's how you wrote, imprinting yourself on everything you touched. You'd probably laugh and make a joke at that, like it was some omen of death. Irony in that. End of poem.
Great, Jean. I like the note of humor and the bite in that the last few lines. You'd probably laugh and make a joke at that, like it was some omen of death. There's irony in that. It paints a tone of what Van Zuylen offered and those little intonations that grasped one's mind and wouldn't let go in the moment as if it's bitten into you. So plus the angle of knowing someone without knowing someone, yet still being impacted in the moment. The idea of getting lost reading again for the 2,357th time, that's a hell of a notation to enjoyment right there. And the thought of getting smacked upside the head, like having another heart transplant through the grasp of thought in the moment. So actually done, Argo. That was really good. All right, Jean, how about you?
I thought this was really well expressed. It was so honest and open, and it was definitely spoken to Van Zuylen. And I think that she did a great job with that. I thought it reflected Van Zuylen's style nicely because it was a little drier than Argo usually writes. And I don't mean drier. Van Zuylen had just a little edge on her poetry. I shouldn't say little either. An edge on her poetry that I think that Argo has captured over here, and I think she did a wonderful job with that as well. So nice work, Arget Wings, and thank you so much for sharing with us tonight. I really appreciate that very much. Maybe the next piece.
Hey, at this rate, if we left our own devices, we just won't make it.
We might. Let's see now. Let me put this one up for you. And this one is by Joe King. And, Rex, whenever you're ready.
The Sylvia Plath Memorial Bean Supper by Joe King. The Grange Hall was overflowing with people all packed in to pay tribute to the best country singer in town. I was thinking to myself, as I crunched on real German coleslaw, what a singular talent it must be to be able to turn drunken fights and cheating hearts into soothing music. I realized that country music was how people coped with the misery in their everyday lives. Their songs made it somehow romantic to be trapped in a world of put-downs, let-downs, knock-downs, hoe-downs, throw-downs, betrayals, and showdowns. And even though I prefer reality to be exactly what it is, I could appreciate the skill with which country artists could reframe reality. I picked up a notepad and began to scribble a tribute. She was an artist of renown, the world could plainly see, and all who saw her were taken with her capability. She competently reframed every harsh reality, but this world holds no quarter for such sensitivity. Alas, the story doesn't end in sweet tranquility. Then I realized it would make a shitty country song, and with that, I accepted my meager limitations and got down to gorging myself on some baked beans. And boom. What do you think?
I thought that it was unique. And in that respect, I think that the Bandolin would absolutely get it. You know, it's not an easy thing to write a tribute to someone that you were close to. There's so many things you want to say, but putting it into a poem is a whole different, way of exposing yourself, you know, and those feelings. And I think that, I think it was a good job. So definitely a nice piece, Joe King, and thank you so much for sharing this with us. And nice work. Absolutely.
Oh, I like the bite in that third stanza, the idea of turning a something that is so sad and hard and worn, so to speak, into romantic, and that thought of being trapped in a world of put-downs, let-downs, knock-downs, hoe-downs, throw-downs, betrayals, and showdowns is a notation to offering up that that touch of oddity in life and adding a different spin on it. So it can be appreciated for what is offered, just like blues walks the same way, but in a different tone. Now, I like that second last stanza, the one his attempt at notating that it sucked. Understanding that that back end of it's just a matter of reflection on a different thought, but the last few lines do offer up that note of irony in the reality of. A shitty country song, he just wrote, so to speak, and then gorging himself on some baked beans, kind of paints it right back into the country vibe with offering up baked beans as a notation to go along with the German coleslaw sitting up top. So there's a nice touch to irony, and the thought of dropping in something so abjectly normal in the moment that it comes across as out of the ordinary and adds a little bit of bite to the conversation. Nicely done, Joe. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Now, I can find the room. We'll be in good shape for another one. Here we go.
If you've gone into the intonations of the musical fruits on that note, many would have added a lot more humor to it as well.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. I agree with you, ma'am. Yeah, it's not easy. It's just not easy. Okay, I'm going to put this next piece up by Rain474, and I'm going to give it a read, because I can't have you read all of them. That would be right. I could get in trouble. You might never come back again on a Friday night. Okay, this is by Rain474, and it's called We Love You, Banjo Lynn. As the crease of the horizon mark the chambers of our vision, I see you flying free right there, admiring your new look you wear. Though sea and sky separate us, laying an unfathomable valley between us, I hold on to the arms of the time who executed this melancholic rhyme. Creating a void in our heart where you live super smart, but now only the memories burst, carrying us to the locations we rushed. Paving the pebbles of love we're immersed, painting memories we together versed, as the eyes of the stars witnessed, all the while our wires got entwined. But the breeze around got envious, spilled the aroma that's so poisonous, deepening our gap that was pinhole size, until we broke up believing the lies. Today I stand here seeing you right there, with fog everywhere, because now I can never be yours, dear. Verses of yours spoke to me, but I am idiot, chose to flee. I regret the day I fought with you, that killed your soul within you. Banjo Lynn, your melody will remain in the voice of the strings we frame. For you will live in our memories, evergreen like the true love stories and the poem.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. Well, it's just what's a different tone from Rain, and it's actually really, really good. The thought of intertwined wires that hits on that note of how people come in and go out, but something always lingers afterwards that you note, the thoughts that surround you, the idea that, because she puts in here, verses of yours spoke of me, but I am idiot, chose to flee. I regret the day I fought with you that killed your soul within you. And hits on that idea of, hey, being humans, we don't always agree on things. So, yes, there are times when integral differences come to bear. But still, that last stands to hold itself for all the other memories, which stand a whole lot further above a singularity. And it is a nice touching tribute as well. What about you? Did you get to read it?
I did get to read it. I thought it was a wonderful write by Rain. I thought it was a nice, sweet pen tribute to a dear friend. And I thought it was well done. There was lovely imagery and thoughts that ran throughout this piece. And I thought it was just nicely written. So thank you very much, Rain, for sharing with us tonight.
And you've got two on the line right now.
Oh, I do. Imagine that.
Yeah.
I do. Well, first off, we have Laurent. Hello, Laurent. Welcome to the party.
Thanks, Jean. How you doing? Hey, Rex.
Good evening.
I'm doing. Me and Felon are running fashionably late tonight. See?
Yeah.
And then we have Felon. Hello,
I'm always fashionable. Hey, guys. Sorry. I'm getting a late start.
Yeah.
Hey, Steve.
I'm just teasing.
Hello, Richter.
How was your first week?
I quit today. I was like, I'm not getting into those. I'm not going to work for somebody that's toxic. So I was like, no. Peace out. Left.
Well,
I like
as
that.
Long as it's good to you, that's all that matters.
That's right. I'm happy about it. So they will come and go. That wasn't for me.
Absolutely.
So, all right.
Right.
I know you're warm and fuzzy, Felon, but man, you could be so cold.
Hey, I am like a little rainbow wherever I go. Let me tell you, I'm always in a good mood, happy-go-lucky. She's the one that struck the match. I just put it out. That was all I'm going to say.
Oh, remind me never to mess with you.
I was very nice, actually. I was very professional. I just said, done.
Hey, so gotta go.
All right, then. We're coming back to you, I guess.
Okay, well, now that we have some other callers, I want to pass this one over to Laurent. Laurent, if you would give this a read, please, I'd appreciate it.
Okay. This is called Blah, Blah, Blah Love by Steve Michelle. Banjo, what did you like? Pliable willow twigs, grapevines, and boxwoods? Feather boots and bomber jackets or lacy pop socks? Stop mid-thighs. Would you smile and say, you don't know me at all? Wreaths and jackets are horrible things to string together on a hot Thursday. You probably would, or not. In the pit of a cross-eyed minute, I pick hundreds of fly leaves, clasp chapters with almost lovers, pissed drunk in an old church. Scars that never got their beautiful droplets from middle fingers and draw knives clanging in the broken reflections of a little girl. Banjo, this doesn't attempt to understand exposed torture. It doesn't pretend it knows why the days came with their wives, the violets that paused in your hollandaise cheeks. And when your heart staggered through names, how grief may have run down the palms that sedated your thirst. This poem is a thing it wishes it isn't. We couldn't ever embalm you with those measly words. You wrote thousands of them, backpedaling through their nightmares. We only see you off in a faith of odes, through the wishbone veil of hurricanes, face of solitude dressed in onyx haze. End poem.
Nice read, Lot.
Nice. Great read, Lot. All right. Fee, why don't you kick us off?
Wow. This, the further that, more than, you know, Laurent read, the deeper it just like, was like daggers to my chest and stomach. What really spoke to me is what she said this, or they said this. This point is a thing. It wishes it isn't. We couldn't ever embalm you with these measly words. You wrote thousands of them, backpedaling through their nightmares. And that speaks volumes to, there's nothing you can really say that's gonna really honor a person to such highness that they are and what they've impacted others upon, that you could sure try. And I think this person that really nailed it and really, almost tried, because I was just like, you can feel the pain. You can also feel the torment that Banjo was in with herself, and it's just, wow. I'm just amazed. Amazing, right?
Excellent. Thank you, Belle. Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought that this was an incredible ride. I thought it was just fabulous. Wonderfully penned tribute to someone they held dear. And I thought it was just so well written. And yeah, I'm with Felon. This poem is a thing it wishes it isn't. We couldn't ever embalm it with these measly words. You know, that's the truth, because no matter what you write, it never feels like it's enough. It can't encompass all those feelings that people are going through. And I thought it was just beautifully done. So thank you so much for sharing with us, Team Michelle. Absolutely.
Bad to dream. And Laurent, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, that penultimate stanza is the one that I was going to use to praise the poetry. But both of you guys have already done that, so let me go to that. In the pit of a cross-eyed minute, I think hundreds of fly leaves, clasped chapters with almost lovers, piss drunk in an old church. That's raw writing. A real look between the lines, so to speak. The exposed torture is very evocative phrasing. And a heart that staggers through name is, I don't know, I admire that kind of writing. This is a hell of a poem.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. And you're right, there's a death note to a thought language played out near the lacy pop socks angle. That in the pit of a crossroad minute you alluded to, and also pissed drunk in an old shirt, scars that never got their beautiful droplets from middle fingers, and drawn eyes clanging in the broken reflections of a little girl. And then that quiet note in that fourth to last stanza, Banjos, this doesn't attempt to understand exposed torture. That was a great thought in there, too, offering that note up. And that thief of odes, this walks in that note as one of those odes, wishbone veil of hurricanes, faces solitude dressed in onyx haze. Great finishing notes there, T. Thank you very much. All right, Gene, we're coming to you.
A wonderful comment, everybody. And Fallon, I have the next one up for you. There you go. This one's by Betty Page.
Okay. Oh, awesome. Betty Page. And this is called Living Nightmare by Betty Page. Living nightmare, caught in my dark dream, nothing more as it may seem. Stuck in life's vortex. He said all I have left me to beg freezing cold and warmth and shelter. My eyes turned jet black. My heart grew even darker, obliterate. Severed every vein on his hands and our blood stains, dripping pools of blood. I live though I'm dead. Feel love for nothing no more. He raped me vivid. Watched, laughed, teased, and mocked. Kept me in the court's decades. Ruined me complete. Now here I am broke. Can't even buy me some coke to numb all of my pain. End point.
Great read, Val. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't we kick this comments off with you?
This is a real indictment of a partner. Watched, laughed, teased, and mocked, kept me in courts decades, ruined me complete. That kind of story is almost a familiar one. It plays as revenge. Leave me. You've got to make your life miserable. The phrasing, severed every vein on his hands, on my blood stains, dripping pools of blood. When you evoke blood, I think you're showing exactly how deep the wounds are. You stole all I have, left me to beg freezing cold for one who shelter. Not a plea for sympathy, but a cold heart back. Living nightmare. Yeah, life is sometimes. Great piece.
Thank you, Laurent. And Gene, how about you?
I would love to, but my computer decided it needed me to reboot it. So, needless to say, I was a little distracted.
Phil, you got to read it. How about you?
I want to know where she gets her coke. I'm just joking. Inquiry minds want to know. I'm just joking. This is the sad thing of it is that most people who are who have been a victim of some kind of violence or of abuse of this nature, they do seek something to numb the pain, something to actually get rid of what they feel. So I think this really speaks really truth to it, and I think it was. Where was that? Oh, the prompt is, let us come upon him first, as if in a dream. And usually that's what happens in a relationship or into something of this nature, is that you get, you know, swooed by them. They become real smitten over you, and you're smitten over them, and then they get you under that thumb, you know, that print, and you're trapped. And then that's when, the torture and what you think is that will last forever. It's like it's immortal. You can't kill the torture and the pain that they put you through. So this just really speaks truth to that topic. So excellent write, Betty Page, and something different from her. Very shocked.
Absolutely. And you hit on that sort of immortality, so to speak. The idea of it does have a kind of vampiric tone to it. But I like the opening. Living nightmare, caught in my dark dream. There is such a balance of thought in there. That it kind of, is it real? Am I really in this, or am I just imagining, so to speak? Until you get to the back end of this, through the darkness, now here I am, broke, can't even buy me some coke to numb all my pain. I thought your idea. Where's she getting her coke from? It's that pink Peruvian marching dust that works so bloody well. But it's got to be clean, unstamped on.
And I've seen dragons in the kitchen.
Well, that's a form of a monster in and of itself. Nicely done, Betty. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, it's back to you.
Okay, Rex, well, listen, I'm still rebooting here. So if you would be so kind as to grab the next one under Betty Page, it's only like the second poem. And would you read that for us, please? I think it's like Zegs and Chet Eugene.
Sure.
Thank you.
All righty, here we go. The Night Turns to Stone by Jag325. Dusk was a person wearing your name, dark-eyed shadows burning cold flame. You danced wildly in the charcoal sea, otherworld bereft of all desire for me. I saw you but didn't, the vague silhouette in a land of dreams where today forgets. And I, just a beggar, now lost and alone, trailing all crumbs as the night turns to stone. And poem. All right, Phil, why don't we start with you, please?
Oh, the cadence on this is impeccable. I mean, to be just, you know, four little stanza, it really packs a punch. And it really, I don't know if the picture goes with it. Yeah, I guess it is a picture prompt. I like when he says, you dance wildly in the charcoal sea, other world brief, a desire for me. And then it kind of, Every stanza kind of just reiterates that in a different kind of way. This is just very nicely written, nice little tight little lines, and that's brevity at its best. Great job.
All right. Thank you, Phil. And Rob, how about you?
Very visceral brevity, impeccable cadence, as Phil already mentioned, and flow. It just runs like water. The ending is perfect. Trailing old crumbs, the night turns to stone. It's a very memorable piece.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. That last stanza, especially with the trailing old crumbs, is if one is trying to find their way home and knowing they won't ever because the darkness has enclosed them within its grasp, that note to being fully and totally lost in the moment. Nicely done there, Jed. Thank you very much. And Jean, do you need me to grab the next one?
Yes, I do. Sorry. I'm almost there, though. I'm getting there.
All right.
Right. Always something.
Oh, it's all right. No biggie.
Lucky for me, I have you.
And Laurent, this one's Those Mystified Hours They Crave by Blue Right for you.
All right, I see it. Those mystified hours they craved. Those that came with brawls, just like all we mortals, but with calls that resonated deep from the sands of their spirit seas. Then earnestly lost amidst the emotional onslaughts, fused. Steeped in love like the bees, nectarine splendor, a web around their charismatic colors, but black and sour one morning. Dumbstruck like the Buddha, poverty and disease that culled his ignorance, woke up the voracious spiritual being, a beggar's hunger unappeased, the cause to light up, a starving hunger for the eternal feast. Hundreds walked the lane to the temples of worship, rode the horses on the very road, yet those lucky few could see where others just blinked, ordained this bias. A handful did wonder in honest envy, dug deep and walked miles looking for the key. The cave wherein the secrets thrive, where mystics looked for the light, null they painted their senses, and else as they delved into the spiritual thoughts. The climb on the silky oak, unyielding in its beautiful form, beckoning with shine and glory. Yet the mystic never did give up. As he grabbed his way up, dismal hope within, fear as heights grew, lonely at every pull-up, while his friends looked on. As the distance to his friends grew, his eye on the pinnacle sharper, the divine rays did coddle him. He never might know. While someone bereft the ground did pray to embrace those crystalline confusions for a few years of their dreary life, those mystified hours they crave. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. And this was written to a prompt from Basil Bunting. The mystic purchases a moment of exhilaration with a lifetime of confusion. Nicely done there, Blue Wright. And Fel, why don't we start with you, please?
Wow. I was really captured by this poem because the way that he starts, or they started out basically, you know, as the brawls of life, all the disparities, all of everything that is wrong in this world is brought to light. And then yet they still have their beliefs. They still have their faith. They see, some could see, some could not. Some rode the horse, some walked. It didn't matter. They were still going to get what they needed to get from whatever they were spiritually believing in. And I think that they end it perfectly. I mean, especially with the prompt. It nails the prompt. The mystic purchases of a moment of exhilaration. In order to actually, you know, appreciate something, you got to know what it doesn't appreciate. And that's in life. You have to. If ever experience failure, how are you going to ever know you got successful? So that's what this means to me. That spirit on a spiritual level. So just a very powerful, powerful write. Enjoyed it a great deal.
Excellent there, Belle. And you're right. This did walk in that notation of, hey, everybody lives the same basic tenets of life. We're born, we live, we die, and it's that struggle in between which kind of grab and others gravitate to. They came with brawls, just like all we mortals, but with chords that resonated deep in the sand that the spirit sees that idea. Even though we may come lost in the moment, there are times that we need to stand above it. And the mystic itself, the one that has that touch to look inside, to understand, and then strive for that note of something a bit more than just the chaos in the moment, doesn't quit on that angled road and keeps looking for that that note to something a little bit deeper, a little bit more enriched within his life. So nicely done there, Blue. This is very well done. And Laurent, how about you?
How about me? I'm sitting here listening to you and Fallon going, wow, they've said pretty much everything that I might have said. Although I will say the third stanza, dumbstruck like the Buddha, poverty and disease that called his ignorance woke up the voracious spiritual being, a beggar's hunger unappeased, the cause to light up a starving hunger for the eternal feast, the search for the light, the search for the reason of existence, the search for a holy afterlife, for a Lord, a Father, are all contained in this particular stanza. The reference to Buddha is interesting because he does sit, but he sits in a particular pose with a very wise smile on his face because Buddha knew. I love this piece.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. How you doing, Jean?
Well, I'm actually here. That's a start. But I want to let you know
that's
I picked
okay.
Naomi up. So, yes.
Oh,
Naomi, did
okay,
you hear the piece?
Yeah, I heard, I just read over it. And, yeah, wow, what a beautiful and powerful piece. I mean, you know, finding faith in a higher spiritual being is amazing, you know, and the so empowering when you do find it. And, you know, the journey to find it is, you know, is a struggle sometimes, and for many people you know, they, it's just, you know, they feel this great relief and yeah, empowerment when they do find it. So I thought this was very beautiful, beautiful spiritual piece. Indeed, so well written. Beautiful.
Excellent. Thank you, Naomi. All right. I've got next one up. It's called Intruding Into Lives. And, Belle, I'm going to get you to do this for us, please.
Absolutely. And this is by Dorgan Orris, and it's called Intruding Into Lives. You're in bed, sleeping tight upon this dark and stormy night. A crashing sound springs up your head, and beads of sweat start to shed. Mommy, Daddy, you call out. The deep-seated fear makes you pout. Nothing rushes to your aid. You're trembling and so afraid. Another loud crash, a window shattered. You grabbed your teddy as if it mattered. You hid inside your closet and held him tight. Squeeze, close your eyes to shield your sight. Arguments between two men. Your parents caught, you heard, heard your mom scream. Then someone shot. Your eyes grew wide, your fear the worst. A few more shots fired as the two men cursed. You were so scared you peed on the floor as the fight ensued outside your door. Hurling through the door, the men fell quick as both were shot by your father's old boomstick. Your mother had blasted both men away, but she had lost her mind on that fateful day. When she had screamed, they killed your dad. She got revenge, but the consequences were sad. End point.
Great read there, Phil. Thank you very much. And Naomi, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, well, wow, what a tale told. I'm just looking at the prompt, what it was. If it was, it was just to write a scary poem to a contest. You see the, you really are put it right in the situation here, what's going on, you know, in the shoes of that little, that child there that's, you know, so scared, you know, doesn't know what's going on. And, you know, he's so scared that even he's on the floor. And, you know, I can't imagine going through something like this, but, you know, really, really well, well laid out tale told here in a beautiful rhythm and rhyme all the way through. So bravo, Delkin Doris.
Excellent. Thank you, Naomi. And Laurent, how about you?
This is I hope this is a hard story and not a true remembrance of something that happened when they were young. Someone once said, and I'm paraphrasing, that there's a never-ending supply of stories to be told. That may be true, but there are certain themes, and this is one theme that most people can relate to. It's been done before, and it should be done again, just like this poem does. The child who loses a parent, who has to hide, is exposed to violence for the first time. And the poet handled it well. I enjoyed it.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And Belle, you got to read it. How about you?
What struck me the most is the fact was the vocabulary. It really stuck with the age of the person telling the story. It wasn't something overbearing. It wasn't something that a child wouldn't say. It was on point. But the cadence of this poem was just so smooth. It was so easy to read. And actually, I got a little twisted up because the poem actually grabbed me. And I mean, this thing has legs on it because it really sends those little chills up your spine. You're thinking the whole time, is this real or not? And I couldn't tell you if it was or not, but it spoke with such emotion. And at the end, I like where she says, didn't say rifle or gun. She called it a boomstick. That was just very clever and nicely captured to actually put the right kind of dressing on this piece. And the consequences was, you know, her losing her father and her mother, and her mother too, because she lost her mind. So this is just, wow, very, very impeccable piece.
Excellent. Thank you, everybody. And, oops, over there, over here.
Okay.
Ah, all right.
I'm ready.
Okay. Well, I got the next one up for LeBron. Cool, Coach
okay,
Orcas, and
awesome.
Then you can take
that's
over once more.
You got it.
Did you, okay.
Code Talkers by Jack Conklin.
Okay. Let's see. Give me 1 second, please. Okay, I got it. Code Talkers by Jack Conklin. We are then the tales we tell and the dreams we decipher. Around midnight fires, strong herbs are drunken. Dragon teeth. We are all shamans in some shape, throwing sticks and bones, reading entrails and leaves, dipping feathers in blood to write futures. Priest or inmate, we cannot hide how we're drawn. It has shifted on the wind and sings in the sinews and senses. And puff.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Naomi, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, this is a really beautiful, you know, an amazing ride here. Another one by Jack Tomkovic. Boy, I'm getting to love every one of his poems. It has such a spiritual feeling around it, you know, that every person can you know, go down that path and be shaped and, you know, by the wind and the things and the sinews and senses, to dive into their future. So well written by Jack here. Beautiful, beautiful poem.
Excellent, Naomi. Thank you very much. And Belle, how about you?
Bravo, Mr. Jack, my little friend here. This really started off, I mean, just, we are then the tales we tell, the dreams we decipher. You know, dreams can come true, and you can make it whatever you want to make it. You can either live in the dream or you can be the dream. And where he also said this, we are shamans. We are all shamans in some shape, throwing sticks and bones. And I like how you captured that we all have a meaning, we all have an impact upon this world in some wonderful way, and that, you know, the flesh and bone, we offer ourselves to that, and most importantly, how he ends it. It has shifted on the wind and sings in the signs of senses. Wow, this is I think it's my best one, the best one I've liked by him. It really just really speaks to me, and I like it. Of course, it's a brevity, and it's this nicely tight, packed little tight lines, which I love. So, bravo, Mr. Jack.
Excellent. Thank you, Phil. Yeah, I thought by the title that I was going to walk a singularity, but then again, it turned around. I walked a very different direction with that note to Code Talker. So, well done, Jack. And, Laurent, you got the reading. How about you?
Yeah, that Code Talker fooled me as well. I was writing for something entirely different. I can understand what he's saying here. He describes it as a waking dream, but to me, it is so. There's a lot of truth here. We are then the tales we tell and the dreams we decipher. We're all shamans in some shape, throwing sticks and bones. Each of us as an individual plays little mental games, guesses, little forecasts, looking at the world around us and making certain assumptions, some mystical, some not. And when he writes, it has shifted on the wind and sings in the sinews and senses, I mean, I just have to agree with him, because it is true. Things have shifted. Beautifully phrased.
Great comment, everybody. Thank you very much. Angie, we're back at you.
All right. Well, it's good to be back finally. Okay, next piece I'm going to put up is by Marcy Gettle, and I have a SoundCloud for this. So here we go. Oh, and I almost hit the wrong person. That would have been funny. Wouldn't be the first time either.
A bad, bad girl by Marcy Gettle. I want to be a bad, bad girl, the kind that rocks your world. I want you to look at me and see everything you could ever need. I want to run my fingers on your skin while you beg me to do it again. I want to see that look in your eyes as I take you right to the sky. I want to be the only one on your mind. I want you to think of me all the time. Baby, I want to be the one you love, the only one you dream of. I want to be a bad, bad girl, the kind that rocks your world. I want you to look at me and see everything you could ever need. I want to be your secret fantasy, the one for which you beg and plead. I want your heart to beat my name as my heart beats for you the same. I want to keep you only to myself, 'cause darling, I will never want anybody else. I want our two hearts to entwine and know I'm yours and you are mine. I want to be a bad, bad girl, the kind that rocks your world. I want you to look at me and see everything you could ever need.
Wonderful song there, Martha. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. And to lead off is our very own Bad to the Bone girl, Sel.
I like this. You know what? It tells me... Not that I'm saying that she's an older woman, but her voice did have that characteristic to it. But I like the fact that she just let it rip. I mean, to do that, this takes guts and this takes confidence to do this. And to me, I stand up and salute her because right here she says, I want your secret fantasy, the one of which you beg and plead. I want your heart to beat my name as my heart beats for you the same. This and the rhyming here is amazing too, but it's sweet and tender, but it also reminds me of something, I Walk the Line by Johnny Cash is what it's kind of, that's how she sung it. It kind of, you know, that beat was on there. So I'm just impressed. Great job there. And I nothing wrong with being a bad, bad girl. Spankings come with it sometimes.
Nice job, Phil. Thank you very much. And Laurent, how about you?
I've got to say that it's been a while since I heard one of Martha Gettle's poems. Her delivery is unique. It's all hers. But the themes that she espouses are I don't want to say common themes, but familiar themes of heartbreak, love, some humor, sadness, almost country and western, if you want to call it that. And as usual, very capable at writing lyrics and very enjoyable.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, well, I was drawn to the same course as the same stanza as Felon was, you know, and those two last lines, I want your heart to beat my name as my heart beats for you the same. You know, I was particularly drawn to those that line, you know, those two lines. Amazing rhythm and rhyme, as rhythm all the way through, as Martha Gettle can do them. And, well written all through, and bravo, Martha. Great song.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Naomi. And we're coming back to you, Jean.
Okay, I just want to let you know I picked up Emmy on the line. So hello, Emmy, and welcome to the program. It's good to have you.
Hello.
Hello, Emmy.
Yeah. Did you? I know you didn't hear much of that because I know I had you in the green room, so I'm not going to put you on the spot. Okay, so the next piece I'm going to put up is by Teddy Llewellyn, and I have an audio for that one as well. Let me hit the button, and here we go.
Beauty and the Beast. Not since Lady and the Tramp at the cinema had the juices to succeed love's own fairy tale. Handmaid, the moonstone became that chimera. Life, its dissection for which change did prevail. From the distance, the twister is showing my fate. It plays innumerable measure, time to find laden, with whom would deign not to play pomegranate. To see her from a window pane now, sweet maiden, having since composed myself, ethos of Bushido, a method incorporating such fragrance of a kind that love would find me spaghetti and the tuxedo. How beeswax my hoofs if should our love be blind.
I don't know.
I'm sorry. Great read there. Great read there, Titus. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Emmy, why don't we start with you, please? Emmy, you there?
Yeah, that was a lovely, lovely write. Okay. Had some troubles understanding it. Mention of beeswax was quite a nice touch as well. If should one love be blind? But it was interesting how there is sort of this comparison of Lady and the Tramp, where I guess Beauty and the Beast, which is kind of what I sort of see in the image below. But yeah, it was interesting.
Thank you, Amy. Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, well, you know, from the comments, he said, oh yeah, I see it now. He had a word bank to work with, and you know, with words like spaghetti and beeswax and homemade juices, moonstone, and you know, he had this really big word bank there that you see it in the AN. But you know, he still succeeded in doing like a really, really classy poem with the word spaghetti and beeswax in it. I don't know how he does it. Oh, my gracious, Titus. But, you know, just so wonderful. You know, his talent is really beyond. Just amazing. Amazing tale told and beautiful, beautiful write.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Naomi. That word bank is definitely a most unusual combination of words to play off of, and he did drop in some nice touches of humor to go with it. That thought with "I'll beeswax my hoofs is one, if should one be blind," was a nice finishing note. And Fallon, how about you? What did you think?
I really, you know, to me it spoke of basically like it started off with the Lady and the Tramp and how it started, but yet I think he was also trying to incorporate someone that he was courting, and then the Lady and the Tramp with the spaghetti, and then the tuxedo with Belle and the Beast. He really meshed this very well together, and he really rocked out this word bank. I'm gonna try this later and see if I can do anything with it, because that's got me thinking, oh my gosh, that's kind of hard. But yet he still was able to add a very classy, or a classic piece that he always says. He is just such, it expels from him. This is just nothing. If I was to read it without his name on it, I would know it was Titus. Very well done.
Excellent, thank you. And Laurent, how about you?
Very much a classic poem in the grand tradition, beautifully written, beautifully felt, an interesting and immortal story. The Beast, who knows he can never have the beauty, but who does manage, after all. Always admire Titus's writing. This is no exception.
Excellent. Thank you. And coming back to you, Gene, and we got a lot of rights to go through yet, so we're going to go down to three comments. That way we can get in as much as we can before the end of the show. And where you want to go, Gene?
Well, the next piece I'm going to put up is by Frank. This is a carryover from last week. I'm working through a whole lot of carryovers. And let me start this one off. It's called The Lamping Worm by Poetic Picasso.
Beyond the Pennine range of hills of the English Midlands, there's a local legend of a mythical snake-like creature haunting the drear and dreaded grove of ancient tales, where the absolute hall of an eternal mistress spooks the villagers. They speak about the enigmatic Lady Sylvia, dwelling in the Eldritch place, an immortal priestess to the revered snake god, Diamond, where the colossal snake roams underneath Slytherin, connected to the temple house of the stone-rich cavern. The tottering screams of the doomsayers of unbearable sacrifices, amidst the daunting rows of hollowed skulls and bones amassed. She lurks within the echoic recesses of the encompassing darkness, hissing the terrifying tongue with her beady eyes. They fear the shadowy figure of a ravenous vampiric bite. She is embodiment of a hellish nightmare come true. And the living flesh of a wanton being from the garden of evil. She springs to enrapture the helpless praise of a sadistic prowl. Woe be unto them, the victims of the lamping worm.
Great read, Frank. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Naomi, why don't we kick it with you first?
Yeah. I used to live by a little town called Lambton here in Quebec. But, I really like the stanza, you know, the stanza of the torturing screams of the doomed souls of unbearable sacrifices amidst the daunting rows of hollow skulls and bones amassed. She lurks within the echoic recesses of the encompassing darkness, hissing with terrifying tongue and her beady eyes. Ah, wow. You know, he really, really draws a portrait of this evil, evil woman here. And, you know, and that laugh at the end, of course, always so spooky. But, great, great write here by Frank. So bravo, bravo, Frank.
Excellent. Thank you, Naomi. And Laurent, how about you?
Very highly polished piece. I like his writing in the first place. But when he decides to do a dark poem, he does it really well. Love his phrasing, love his language. Excellent.
Thank you, Laurent. And Fel, how about you? Fel, you there? Emmy, how about you? What do you think?
I was going to say I liked sort of the emphasis at times of certain details, like hollow skulls, almost suggesting like something had actually eaten them out. So that was that part was really good. I don't actually have the poet. So the other thing was the laugh at the end that always gets me. It was a good read for sure. The voice is always good at like kind of sealing the creepiness, and yeah, the laugh while campy is always very endearing.
Excellent. Thank you, everyone, and nicely done, Frank. Thank you. And Jean, we're coming back to you.
Okay, well, that brings me to Naomi's piece. So, Naomi, whenever you're ready, it's up.
Okay, we're changing back to Wednesday night. This is Vibration. You want me to want to beg for the soft vibrations from his fingertips, like water lapping the edge of the pier. My body humming under his slow touch, his hands loose with sugar as he slid down my throat, wrapping around my lungs. As with each of his caresses, I stare into the sun rising, bringing on the sunshine I'd always waited for, or the shimmer of the moon scorching through the dark. His hands dancing upon my skin, surrounding me in the notes he played, seducing me from within, his music taking over, his melody taking me away, encasing my body, tearing me up, wearing me wet, moving me in unfathomable rhythms, forging me into his beautiful skin until I tiptoe on daggers and walk through fire. He wanted me to feel, wanted to watch me react, his hands gentle as the midnight wind on the contours of my breath, like moist earth against my flesh, then flames that lick and banish. Wanted me to place my hands upon his chest, embracing his heart with security as I moaned, soaring in the sonnet of his fingertips into love and all its forms, pressed against its wildness like a desperate tide, spreading, rising, breaking against his hundred precipices like a raging river against the rocks, my breath shattering when he pressed into me, gripping the sheets and screaming, trembling like a heavy mallet on a sacred drum. As with the untamed horse, I run. End poem.
Great read, Naomi. Thank you very much. And as Jim Carrey said in The Mask, that was smoking. Now tell us how you really feel, what you really want, and into the depths of that pleasured note that you really wish to dip into. That was smoking. Thank you very much. Laurent, how about you?
This is so beautifully written and so sensual. You have part of you that knows how to arouse the listener. You aroused me with this particular piece. It has a sensual beauty that doesn't miss a trick. Encasing my body, tearing me up, wearing me wet. That's great phrasing. Being played like an instrument is a theme that I enjoy. And his hands gentle as the midnight wind on the contours of my breast, like moist earth against my flesh. You can fall right into language like that and let it wrap you up. And that's exactly what I did. Ha!
Thank you.
Excellent, Bob. Thank you. And Emmy, how about you?
Man, I need to get myself a man. Anyway.
Oh, that was a great opening line.
I think the part that I like the most actually is like hands laced with sugar, because it's like it's there's like a sweetness to it, and it's just it's given like a concrete touch. But the other thing is wrapping around my lungs is in like right at the core of it, which is like your breathing and whatnot, and it just makes it so much more close and more intimate when it's written like that. And then like I feel like in a way it just gets better with time. Like the heavy mallet on a sacred drum, as with the Untamed Horses I run. Very, very strong piece. Lovely stuff.
Thank you. Thank you, Emmy.
Oh, you got a couple other ones in there too, Naomi, from Mamuel. Rousing right, Naomi. I think I need a shower now. And go ahead and take Frank, drop your neck, pass me the sponge. And that opening line from Emmy, that was perfect leading. So I think you got quite a bit out of that one. Well, everybody got quite a bit out of it from you. All right, Jean, we're coming back to you.
Great job. Great job, everybody. My computer did it again, Rex. It did.
Okay, thank you.
So I'm going to reboot again. I'm so sorry.
Okay, no problem. Let me go dig into where you left off. Okay. All right, this one's for you, Emmy. And, oops, there it is. Aha. Would you please read Honeyed Nostalgia by Victoria Foss, please?
Okay. So this is Honeyed Nostalgia. A jar of spring honey sits on my desk, waiting for my spoon to dip into the sticky mix, dilute it down with the hot water of a rose mint tea to soothe the ache of my sore throat caused by the early fall cold brought on by a shifting of seasons. I cannot help but to smell the subtly sweet aroma of spring flowers from a blackberry bush, lightly dusted in the afternoon warmth and the cleaned by the gentle morning dew. The muskiness from pollen that caught a ride on a honeybee's leg and ended shaken off in the mix of nectar that soon became this thick, sticky amber, inhaling deeper, the gentle woodiness from the old beehive sneaks in past my poor congested nose, from wood warmed to melt the night frost and captured in the soft beeswax, left to linger on my tongue. End poem.
Great read, and Emmy, thank you very much. And Naomi, why don't you kick us off, please?
Wow. This is so, you know, so well written. I mean, you know, all from honey. My gracious, you know. This is what we call Ambedo. You know, it's when you're, I had a contest on that, you know, it's when you you drift into nostalgia of something, you know, like it could be, you know, the drifting of wind in the trees or cream floating around in your coffee. And here it's, you know, it's all about the honey. And wow, and the arousing of the senses in here, my gracious, you know, from the soothing of the ache of the sore throat, the rose, mint tea, the hot water, the stickiness, you know, and in the scents, you know, the aromas, just a beautiful, beautiful ride all the way through. So well written. Bravo, Victoria. Bravo, bravo.
Absolutely there, Naomi. You notice our mother tends a few hives that feed off her blackberries each year and help pollinate the harvest. While getting over a cold, she was using some of her honey, and the smell had captivated her. And we forget how strong a note of aromatics brings on such a quixotic note in the mind, whether it be memory or something that just lingers and sticks with us so very well, and it's captivated that note very well. And Laurent, how about you?
This is a poem of the senses. I admired the way that Victoria brought out the aromas and the taste as she inhaled deeper and longer. And who knew an autumn misery could be so potent a prompt for the writing? Really well done.
Excellent. Hi, Phil. What do you think?
I really liked how she captured every little detail of you know, as the seasons are changing, and to, you know, the smells that you can, if you know, if you ever put a cough drop in your mouth and all of a sudden it takes you to a different place, like for real, I mean, it's like an out of body experience. You're like, oh, I knew that, but it brings these other the scents, and it brings other senses alive because it opens up your nose, and yet you inhale or whatever, you know, ingest the cough drop, and it also gives you a taste, and then the scent, it just, I mean, and she captured that so well to me. I mean, that's what it was for me. It was just almost like putting a nice little cough drop in your mouth, and it's like, oh, I need that. So just like the poem, I needed it. Very well written.
Thank you, everybody. And the next one we got is White Raven by Cedar Chapman. The black crow cawed at the crack of light and soared up high to gaze the clouds. His wings spanned wide across rose-lit skies, heedless to glide without contempt. Betwixt two trees on which he'd land stood a branchless tree with long black vines that swayed back and forth from timber to timber like a seductive web dancing in a summer breeze. And amidst the smoky tan haze air, beneath the canopy of silk-laced trees, laid a bouquet of fermented fruit and leaves offered to the raven to tend and feed. The raven swooped down below, among a flock of gulls and crows, and ravished through white man made boxes and white bags, so to pillage and lay claim to his chattel. Oh, blessed is the raven by the presence of man's gracious munificence, to indulge in his intoxicating sustenance, and never atone for his penance. At last light the raven returns to the resting grounds of his mother's mother. He dreams of soaring from branchless tree to branchless tree, over gravelly roads, piled with drunken white man-made boxes and white bags, without ever having remembered how free a wild black raven can be. And Paul. And Emmy, why don't we start with you on this one, please?
I mean, wow, like the detail here is just really, really good, like smoky tan hazed air. And then in a way there's like a tying of modernization in as well. White man-made boxes and white bags being a really stuck out to me, I guess. So Sorry, I'm losing my train of thought, like all over the place here. And there's sort of like this, return home and then kind of going out and exploring the world, that kind of feeling when you sort of leave the nest, that's really well emphasized towards the end. But yeah, lovely stuff.
Thank you, Annie. And Ron, how about you?
A new take on the Black Crow and what the raven is and how it really resides in literature in a way that allows everyone to be immediately familiar with the bird and what the bird is usually doing. I was very interested by the AN in which he recounts what he saw and what the inspiration for the piece is. Pretty poignant, very well written. To indulge in his intoxicating sustenance and never atone for his penance is a real indictment of the drunken First Nation individuals that he saw passed down in the alleyway. Well done.
Thank you, Laurent. And Fallon, how about you?
I think that, for one, this poem stands on its own. Really, I don't want to say too much other than it's a very polished piece, and I think the wording is just impeccable. And I don't really know much about this writer, but just, wow, amazing write, and it just really speaks of his strength in writing. Great job.
Yeah, Seed is pretty visual on his pieces, so nicely done there, Seed. Thank you very much. And Jean, can you press the button to because I got Selena's up next.
Okay, here we go.
Is a waterfall of golden moments which turn to dust when we are apart. When we lay together, the moon melts in your eyes, bathing me in your luminescent, loving grace, and the heavens resound with my rapturous sighs. When you are near, I drink in every nuance of you, like heady wine. Your essence intoxicates my spirit, so when you leave, you become a beautiful déjà vu. Love chose you, and I was swept along by its tide, drowning in the wonderment that is you, the only paradise for me is to be by your side. You were there before the universe was born in a blaze, my soul awaiting the caress of yours, and I shall love you only until the end of days.
you very much for the SoundCloud. It is definitely appreciated. And that was a nice, soft, subtle, nuanced note to her voice, which made this come alive. So thank you very much. And Naomi, we're going to start with you.
Yeah, what a beautiful voice, eh, that she has. My gracious. You know, this is such a romantic piece, you know, such a loving, you know, it's almost like a song. When I was particularly drawn to "When You Are Near, I Drink in Every Nuance of You, Like Heady Wine, Your Essence Intoxicates My Spirit. So when you leave, you become a beautiful déjà vu." And, you know, of course, the French part, because, you know, I'm French. So, you know, that is really beautiful, you know, to be the somebody's la lune des étoiles, la jour, la nuit, mon tout, je t'aime. You know, that's so beautiful, the ending there. So, wow. Beautiful, beautiful right here, Selena. Very touching.
Right. Thank you, Naomi. And Laurent, how about you?
Well, like Naomi, I enjoyed the use of the French. This poem struck me as almost, it wasn't a religious poem, but it sounded like a prayer sung in church. The beautiful voices in the background, extremely well produced, but very, very reverential, and I think intended to seem prayerful in the way it was delivered. Excellent.
Thank you, Laurent. And Annie, let's finish up with you, please.
Yeah, I think probably my favorite part was at the very beginning when mentioning the golden waterfall that then sort of turns to dust. In a way, it's just really an elegant, like, metaphor. This sort of conveys or equates the love to the fluid or the essence, right? And then once that's gone, it sort of dries up and becomes anhydrous, you could say. So I definitely love that part, and of course the voice. And I kind of agree as well with the sort of church-like aspect of it. The backing vocals really made me feel like I was in sort of a cathedral of sorts. So, yeah.
Excellent. Thank you. Fel, we're going to lead you off on the next one. And Laurent, your piece is coming in the window now.
All right. I guess I'd better pay attention. Yeah, okay. All right. This is called Strife and Rage. Society is rife with bad manners, no lack of boorish behavior. Does wise advice from Ann Landers make her our natural savior? I think not. Matters are worse, like carrots who bellow and scream, reading you chapter and verse. Certainly, you've all seen the meme. Sovereign citizens, God bless them, exist in their own little world. No salute or pledge of allegiance to our country's flag when unfurled. Deniers of historical reality, our elections and justice a fraud, airheads testing my sanity with theories irretrievably flawed. Putin's gone completely mad. His armies rage across Ukraine, criticized in Moscow and Petrograd, battlefield losses drive him insane. And the other guy, he's still around. They're calling him Orange Jesus. And oh, what a mighty sound when heaven absorbs this thesis. The second coming, right around the corner. There'll be no gladsome drumming, and no one left to stand as mourner for the passing of an age consumed by strife and rage. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. And Fallon, go ahead. Kick it off, please.
Yeah, I was really taken back by this piece because, you know, really you didn't speak of, you know, you spoke of one thing, but you didn't really, you didn't break it down to a party. You broke it down to a society, and you broke it down to what we need, how we need to unite and stand together as one, and that we need to take take these Karens and these people that are causing, you know, bringing little bitty things that are not much of nothing to light, and yet we have all these other pressing hard things going on in our country and world, and yet we got somebody wanting to call on somebody having a barbecue. So it really speaks truth to what's going on in this world, and that we better open our eyes to what is to come. Excellent right there, Laurent.
Thank you, dear.
Great thoughts there, Sal. Thank you very much. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, I just got back. Sorry, I'm just reading over it. Can you take another comment and come back to me?
Sure, no problem. Amy, how about you? What do you think?
You know, it's interesting because, like, 60 years from now, if someone reads this poem, they're probably not going to understand what Orange Man means because it's so present and within the times. And I think the mention of Putin, in a way, this sort of takes on a distant approach. And the there seems to be sort of like a passive annoyance with it at times. But the mention of Putin and whatnot sort of immediately drew my attention to the Russian refugee issue that is another completely different can of worms. But, yeah, those are my thoughts.
Thank you, Amy. And Naomi?
Yeah. You know, this is very, very powerful, right, all through, Laurent. You're so well-worded, you know. When you talk about Putin's gone completely mad, his armies rage across Ukraine, criticized in Moscow and Petrograd, battlefields losers drive him insane. You know, but then and the other guy, he's still around. They're calling him Orange Jesus. I know what a mighty sound when heaven absorbs these Jesus. You know, just wonderfully written all the way through. You know, the rhyme makes it so captivating. It just pulls you in. And, you know, just very, very modern edge to it, and you know, something that is very thought provoking, and that you have to take it to heart. You know, you have to think about it, and these are very very important message that you have in here. So, bravo, Laura, wonderful, right?
Thank you, Naomi. This bites at the ease of times, that little notion of how society grows soft in its belly when life is really good for a long period of time and nobody's actually gotten a real grasp on what is going on around the world because they're paying too much attention to themselves and their own little corner or bubble, so to speak. And before you know it, things start unraveling. You pull a cord, and one thing leads to another, which leads to another and another, and all of a sudden you've got, like you said, Karens who bellow and scream, and they don't even know what they're screaming for. And you've got these other ones who kind of walk around in their own little world, just traveling, so to speak, as they would call it. And the idea of the integration of society has been lost, that note to what is supposed to comprise an essence of what a country, what a society, what a community is, has gone by the wayside. And that is where the strife and the rage really bites hard at those who see it, but they don't do anything about it except rage and screams. So nothing actually gets done. It just gets pushed on down the road to the next angle and to the next angle, and eventually it just unfurls totally and disintegrates. So, nicely done there. And Fel, I got you coming up next.
Okie dokie, Smokey. This was actually given to me at the actual thing of Degenerate by Pee Wee, and it's called Flying Monkeys Crash Course by Felon. And as far as society builds tomorrows with deviant principles, drafting disparities, offspring, and a future of zero accountability, softening along their cortex, suckling independent thoughts, altering narratives to support opinions and bury facts, debilitating traditional structural and family units, demands to one's rights while disregarding another's plight, remorse pinches the arms of a neurological defect, numb to the finger and the thumb squeeze, rebellious are the degenerate, taking theirs, yours, and mine. End poem.
Great read, Phil. Thank you very much. And that's kind of dovetails right into Laurent's angle. Nicely done. And Laurent, why don't we kick it with you first?
Yeah, nice job on this, Felon. I see at least certain similarities in attitude between your piece and my piece. The nefarious society building tomorrow's deviant principles. The mention of zero accountability and taking away independent thought, altering narratives, all those things are happening right now. It's a strange, strange society, a very odd place that we've found ourselves in. Well done.
I agree. Thank you. I agree. And when I was reading your poem with you, I was like, oh, my God, I wrote on that just a minute ago, and we're both three hours at the same time. Good minds think alike.
There you go.
Excellent. Thank you there, Laurent. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, this is so true, you know, and it is a lot like a long-ass poem, you know. But, drafting disparities, offspring in a future of zero accountability, it's so true. You know, in Canada here too, you know, we pet and we just pet the kids nowadays. They're so as if everything is owned to them without ever doing an effort, you know, of getting where they want. So they want everything right now. Right away without doing the work. But, you know, of course, your poem touches on a lot more than just that. But, numb to the finger and thumb squeeze, rebellious are the degenerate, taking theirs, yours, mine. I just love that ending. So very, very powerful piece here, Felon, that's very thought-provoking. All the way through.
Thank you.
And superbly written. Bravo.
Excellent. Thank you, Naomi. And Emmy, how about you?
Yeah, I was thinking about the demands to one's rights while disregarding another's plight, which is actually more common than you might think. Like, there's been a lot of strange sort of exclusionary attitudes specifically within movements that are standing for the rights of like one demographic. And it's kind of been that way for a while too. So it's always very sad when you see that kind of stuff going on. And a lot of the time too, there's like this, I mean, I see it myself too, when you mentioned like the way we're raising kids, like I see it within my students, like this odd sense of entitlement of like, I deserve this, this, and this. And like half the time it's like, well, you didn't turn anything in. So no, you don't deserve that. And then, you know, it's just back and forth. Anyway, sorry, I'm like ranting at this point. But yeah, I understand it.
Excellent. Thank you there, Emmy. And I do like the thought with the flying monkeys. That's a nice tone right out of The Wizard of Oz. All those little things floating around, screaming, cursing, raising hell, and not really getting a damn thing done to boot. So Nice touch with the title there, Phil.
Thank you. I can do the Wicked Witch of the West. You know that.
You mean like?
I'll give you my little pretty and your little dog too.
Yeah, I'll get that one. Jean, you've been awful quiet over there. Are you still alive?
I'm trying to. I think so. I need to test. Wait, let me pinch myself. Yes, I'm still alive and kicking here. I've been quiet. For handling things, so I just shut up. It was good. But I do have another piece up for now. I want to try and get two more in before the end of the night. So
okay.
I think everybody who called in has been read, so that's awesome. The next piece I'm going to put up, I'm going to ask Naomi to read, and this is by Manuel.
Okay. Wow, what an honor to read Manuel. Melancholic rumination. A single moment of bonfires burning in the dark night, my soul. Four words uttered in the heat of wild passion. You confess to me, like a devout kneeling, pious beside a silent clergyman. Fuck, I love you. When I awoke, the world silent. Like a ghost, I walk alone, unnoticed. I tried pleading for paltry handouts, a tepid touch, denied, denied, denied. Sisyphus had an easier time pushing his boulder uphill before it rolls down. I'm pinned between fight and flight. Paralyzed and stigmatized, without hope, without faith, my heart lost, my love shunned, my world shattered, all by my hand. End poem.
Great read, Naomi. And boy, that was a hell of a ride down to the very last stanza, which really hit home hard. Nicely done, Manuel. Thank you. All right, Phil, we got to start with you, doll. What'd you think?
Oh, my gosh, she had me going because I was like, oh, man, it's about to get really good. I'm like, this, especially, you know, the F, I love you. And then she woke to what it was, and that was not what she thought it was. She might love him, but he's not digging that. You know, we always fall to, we always, our hearts always get into certain things, and we're not able to pull it back and communicate. This is what it is, nothing more, nothing is. End of story. This is it. But then again, even if you say that that's it, you still can't control what the heart wants. So this is just a very powerful bite and very hard hitting, and just a lot of reality to it, and a lot of truth of what some of us women do to ourselves. So just wow, Manuel, knocked it out of the park, girl.
Excellent. Thank you. And Laurent, how about you? No, you there?
He's probably on mute.
I'm sorry, I was on mute. Yeah, we're doing melancholic ruminations, are we not?
Yeah.
Yeah. The you really need to beware words spoken in passion, because they're drawn forth in the heat of the moment, but evaporate in the light of day very quickly. I like the reference to Sisyphus, pinned between fight and flight. Paralyzed and stigmatized, without hope, without faith. Wow. Hell of a piece.
Thank you, Laurent. And Emmy, how about you, please?
Yeah, in a way, it almost kind of seems like a dream with, like, when I awoke, the world silent like a ghost. I walk alone unnoticed. And that was like a very sort of a slap back to reality moment that was really effective. And then there was a comparison to the devout sort of kneeling beside a silent clergyman, the weird sense of servitude in there. And then it just sort of gets worse and worse, obviously, as it goes essentially into social ostracization and the feeling of that, which is usually one of the more worse experiences that few unfortunate human beings have gone through.
Excellent. Thank you, everyone. All right, Jean, we're going back to you. But you got to unmute
first. I'm going to try it. Exactly. Exactly. Okay. I'm going to put the next one up to you, Rex. So just so you know ahead of time, Fallon dropped. So good night, Fallon.
Okay.
And,
night, Phil.
Here we go. This one is by Rhymed Raven. Appreciate it.
Who's reading it? Me? Oh, okay.
Bye.
Memoirs of a Dearly Missed Future by Rhymed Raven. We sat on wooden stools round a battered oval table with half-inch thumbnail edges scarred by innumerable fingernail markings, the hand-treated tugging and turmoil of numerous generations. The room was silent, apart from the human noises we made as we adjusted our postures and tucked our belongings out of sight. I remember as the room went dark, we sought comfort in the neighboring gazes. We smiled without noise and cheered with our eyebrows as the moving candles danced across the room, held together by white frosting and a quick birthday message, "Happy birthday, darling," it said defiantly. The ceremony as a whole was conducted in slow motion, keeping the moment alive a tad longer, and when it ended, the noises grew again, as quickly as the cake was eaten. The delicate sounds of creaking stairs and gentle gliding of cold drinking glasses almost vanished in the background. She took the surprise in strides and put on her happy face. She had one on standby to match the wig she chose that day. The night went long, long enough to be memorable, to be a happy thought on a lengthy train ride after a warm, tightly held goodbye earlier on the platform. At times, I remember her stepping out of the damp, joyful room, crossing an invisible line to say goodbye one last time with a tightly knit hug just before the lights went out. And at others, I smile alone and poem. All right, Naomi, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, this is very, very touching, right? I find, it could be taken as a, Memoirs of a Dearly Missed Future. The title could be taken as a metaphor for someone who's missed an opportunity there to move forward, or, the passing of a loved one. He says in here, she had one on standby to match the wig she chose that day. When you have wigs, it refers to maybe somebody going through chemo or something, with cancer. So you have a wig because you lose your hair. But I mean, this is just, of course, I love Rhymed Raven writing every time. It's just she knows how to draw out the emotion from her rights, and this was very touching. Bravo, Rhymed Raven.
Excellent, thank you, Naomi. And Laurent, how about you?
So the title kind of says it all: Memoirs of a Dearly Missed Future. What a way to handle a phrase. It's quite novel. The room was silent, apart from the human noises we made as we adjusted our postures and tucked our belongings out of sight. The way she writes, it's not difficult or obtuse or abstract in any way, yet it's very, very subtle. We smiled without noise and cheered with our eyebrows. I love that. Very confident, very inspirational, right? Nicely done.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. And Emmy, how about you?
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, there's just so much to chew on here. Like the sound, there was like so much emphasis on that part, and a lot of it felt very mute in a way, smiling without noise. The human noises, adjusting postures. The tucking our belongings out of sight almost conveys a sense of wider distrust or like towards one another. And so it, in a way, this often seems to me like a play on the distance between human beings in the modern sense. At least that's where it seems to be coming from. But especially with regards to like the sounds, the holding of cold drinking glasses, just reading that, sort of imagining like ice like clinking around in like drinks and stuff. And then the like warm, tightly held goodbye. It's a very, very impactful stuff. And I pretty much agree with Laurent being very, very subtle in the way that it emphasizes it itself.
Excellent, thank you. Yeah, those first six stanzas kind of hit at that idea of something that was to be a happy occasion, and it started out that way and drew on those notes, the thought of being quiet to the point so you can't surprise, and then that seventh stanza, she took the surprise and strived and put on her happy face. She had one on standby to match the wig she chose that day. And then it goes a little bit more melancholy until you finally get to that last note, that smile alone, knowing the back end of this is finality. And those thoughts of what could have been but now are lost forever in that moment. Nicely done, Ryan. Thank you. All right, Jean, we're coming back to you for a final moment.
I only have 3 minutes, so I gotta think now. Think. Tonight, 12:30, Parts in a Part Saint. Please, if you have time, call in and speak to Faziana and Babbler. I'm sure it's going to be a wonderful show. It usually is. Tomorrow night is Gray Eye Smith and Bad Company. So he would be happy to have some company as well. After that, we have The Solace and Shadows with Robert M. And supposed to be a wonderful show on top of it. What can I say? They all seem good to me. Followed by Rex with Rhythm and Rhyme on Sunday. And his topic is a band by the name of Free. And you should all check it out. I believe we're looking for some rights for that one. And should be a wonderful show. And that brings us to Monday. And then Tuesday starts off our sixth annual Halloween extravaganza. Anyway, that's it for me. Rex, how you sitting on Sunday? We're doing all right? We do need some rights, though, don't we?
We do need some rights. I'll know more tomorrow because that's usually the day we get impacted with a number of rights. But, yes, I'm short on them at the moment.
Nice. So, everybody, if you get a chance, check them out. Good music, good inspiration. And I look forward to the show on Sunday with you, Rex. And I want to thank everyone who called in tonight. I want to thank you, Emmy, Naomi, Rex, as always, for co-hosting with me. Thank you, Laurent. And thank you, Fallon. I didn't miss anybody, did I? No, I didn't miss anybody.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. And, we did pretty good tonight, Rex. I'm surprised we got as many done as we did. So that's awesome. So I have four that we're going to, I have to carry over to somewhere. So if worse comes to worse, Rex, I got them for Sunday. Everybody, have
work.
A wonderful weekend. And take care of yourself. Yeah,
thank
you never know.
You. Good night, everybody.
You all take good care. Take care. Thank you. Good night. Good night, Naomi. And, yep. Great night.
Good night, everybody. Thank you.
Twice. You know what's been happening? It's so strange. I'll be sitting here and I'll be working on the computer and everything is fine. bringing you into the green room before I start talking to you. God, you know, I'll be sitting here on this computer, right, and I'll be doing fine, and all of a sudden my mouth locks up. It just locks up, and I can't move it, and it won't let me do anything. And I'm sitting here like, are you freaking serious? I can't shut the computer down. I can't do anything. I have to reach over and turn it off by the button. And I hate doing that. I just hate doing it. So I have to apologize for my, I don't know, stupid shit disappearing all the time. But I appreciate you handling things and making up for it. Awesome stuff. And just so you know, I think we have 3 poems carried over. That's not too bad. Oh, I lied. We have 4. Are you there, Rex? Or did you leave? You left. Okay, I feel better now.